All right, welcome everybody. Woohoo! Thanks for joining me today. I hope you've had a great first day here. We've got some sunny weather as well, so we'll get you outside soon. But thanks so much for joining me here. And we're going to be talking all about high availability, specifically for Hyper-V. Now, beyond just high availability, failover clustering also provides mobility for Hyper-V as well, being able to move your virtual machines beyond a physical server to another host in the cluster, or as you're going to see in Windows Server 2012, to other clusters, other hosts, backup data centers. So what we're going to be covering today is pretty broad range of topics from Hyper-V and failover clustering in 2008 R2 through 2012, as well as Virtual Machine Manager in 2008 R2 through System Center 2012. My name is Simon Perryman. I am a technical evangelist with Microsoft based out of Redmond, corporate headquarters. And right now my focus is private cloud, virtualization, and high availability. But prior to this role, I spent about 4 years on the engineering team as a program manager, building a lot of these clustering features, working a lot with the virtualization technologies. So I'm going to try to save some time for the end to make sure we have a great opportunity for questions. I also want to let you know that several other people from the cluster team are also here on site this week. There is a booth down in the Windows Server area of the Technical Learning Center dedicated to high availability. So if you don't have a chance to get your questions answered today, please make sure you stop by there, speak with some of our other experts there as well. So as we kick it off, failover clustering in Windows Server 2012. Why is it important? Well, we really like to think about it as the plumbing of our infrastructure. We have our virtualization platform. We have our management layer with System Center Virtual Machine Manager. But really, the clustering is the plumbing. It binds our individual servers together, allows them to communicate with each other, health check with each other, and allows us to move resources between each of them. We're going to first start by talking about how we optimize a cluster. These are best practices for virtualization to prepare the cluster, prepare different properties, resources, and even private properties for all of your individual virtual machines. From speaking to a lot of customers, we found that a lot of people don't even know about these features. They're hidden, they're obscure. So you're going to see how to do it both in 2008 R2, and then look at some of the changes, some of the improvements that we've made in Windows Server 2012. We're then going to move on to Virtual Machine Manager, cover all of these best practices on features about how you can best manage your cluster using VMM. So let's start by talking about optimizing. But first, let's just get some terminology down, talk about the two different types of clustering we're going to be covering today. The first is host clustering. This is what probably most of you are familiar with if you've used clustering in the past. This is where we have physical servers, we connect them together, and we move workloads or virtual machines between the physical servers. So this gives us high availability if the host crashes. This gives us the ability to detect the health of the virtual machine if that VM crashes. We also have a feature called the heartbeat settings, which give you the ability to check the health of the guest operating system if that crashes. Host clustering is great if you have maintenance, so for planned downtime when you need to apply a patch, replace some hardware. And it gives us this mobility of our virtual machines. Now, the next type of clustering that we're going to be covering a little is used less commonly. It's known as guest clustering. And in this case, this is where we connect our virtual machines together. And within our virtualization layer, we have applications that can fail over and move between different virtual machines. Inside the guest operating system of the virtual machine, you have to install Windows Server, create a cluster out of it, and connect the networks together either by fiber channel or iSCSI, because we have to pass through this virtualization layer. Now, this gives us a high availability for those applications running inside the virtual machine. If you need to patch a virtual machine, plan downtime, you could fail over the resource, patch it. It also recovers the service if the service hangs inside the guest OS. So these are going to be the two different types of models of clustering we're focusing on. Host clustering, physical servers, guest clustering, our virtual servers. But what about combining them? Can you do this? Can you have a physical cluster that's running a lot of VMs, and out of those VMs, form a guest cluster? Absolutely. It's fully supported, and we're seeing a lot more customers do this now to get the highest levels of availability possible. If you're just clustering the virtual machines on the physical layer, what happens when you need to patch a VM? Okay, maybe you could go deploy redundant virtual machines. That's a solution. But if you have this guest clustering as well, it gives you that high availability at both layers. We don't place any restrictions on whether your servers are physical, whether they're virtual, so long as they meet the clustering requirements. Two clustering requirements. Every component must be logoed for Windows Server. The entire solution must pass the validation tests. So long as you meet that, we don't care if you're using physical or virtual. So the next question, can you combine them? Absolutely. We don't place restrictions on mixing clusters with physical servers and VMs. Now, in all practicality, we don't see too many people do this in the real world. Primarily, it's in test environments where there's limited hardware, where they want to simulate having a cluster, but maybe they don't have the physical servers to go dedicate to that. So this could certainly be used. Another good example is having a hot spare. And so what we mean by this is you have physical cluster running VMs. That's kind of your backup. And then lots of individual VMs on standalone hosts. A VM on a standalone host is coupled with a VM running on a cluster. So this really tries to eliminate some of the hardware challenges we have. And all of this could be done in Windows Server 2008 R2. So first feature that a lot of people don't know about, again, available in 2008 R2, is our health detection of the virtual machine itself. Now, what we can do with clustering without enable this heart beating is we can check whether the virtual machine is running, whether the virtual machine has crashed, and we do this by looking at the virtual machine resources, the virtual machine service. But we can't really peek inside the virtual machine and see what happens if the VM itself is running, but the guest operating system inside has crashed, or it's blue screened. Well, if you turn on this feature in 2008 R2, enable heartbeat settings, we can actually detect blue screens and user mode hangs. So if you have a problem with inside the guest OS, we detect it, we can restart the OS, we could restart the virtual machine, or we could even move that virtual machine to a different host. Try it over there. Now, this was disabled by default in 2008 R2. So if you want to get this additional level of protection, additional level of resiliency, you need to go into your VMs, go to the property of the VM, and turn it on. In Windows Server 2012, it is enabled by default, so you don't have to go and do anything special. Now, one piece of criticism that we actually got when we came out with 2008 R2, when speaking to VMware customers, was saying that we did not have virtual machine prioritization. That's not quite true. In fact, in 2008 R2, you do have virtual machine prioritization. It's just not very well known how it can be used. And we do this by a property that's called auto start. You say, is my virtual machine important or not? So let's be honest, not a great level of granularity, but there are still two settings saying high priority VM or not a high priority VM. So all of the virtual machines, they have auto start enabled by default. And what auto start does is it means, will the virtual machine automatically start up after it's been turned off or after the host has crashed? If you have an imported virtual machine, it's business critical, it's part of your key infrastructure, you're going to want to make sure that that gets online first. If you have less important VMs because you're in a highly virtualized environment, for example, maybe your human resources website, we could turn that off. Let's not worry about that. Let's make sure our important VMs get up first. Now, this gives us the ability to make sure that our workloads that we need up and running, those go up and running first. Now, one challenge that we had that I'm going to talk about next couple slides is what we would call a startup storm. Now, what happens here when a cluster goes offline, the entire cluster crashes, maybe you have a power outage. You try to start the cluster. The first couple nodes come online. You have quorum. As soon as you have quorum, we're going to try to start all of those resources on those first one node, two node, three nodes that have quorum, while we wait for the other nodes to join the cluster. That means that we're trying to put all of the workload that should be across the entire cluster on just a few servers. Now, if you're doing file server, if you're doing DHCP clustering, starting up the service isn't too resource intensive. But whenever we think about virtualization, we need to think differently. The reason why is when we start up a VM, we're not just starting a single service. We're using a lot of memory. We're using a lot of resources because we're starting all of the services and applications within that VM as well. So starting a virtual machine uses way more resources than running it in traditional production. So think about this. You now have twice as many virtual machines per host, and they're using maybe twice as much resources as regular production. That can overload the host. This startup storm can, in fact, cause one host to crash. All of those resources are now moving to another host, and that has even more stress on it. And we've seen people have kind of a domino effect, where one server crashes, everything fails over, the next one crashes, the next one crashes. So we have a couple of ways to avoid it. First way to avoid it, disable your low priority virtual machines. Use this auto start property, turn it off. Now, in System Center 2012, we've made this much better. We've added additional granularity by saying we have no auto start, low, medium, and high priority virtual machines. And you're going to find that with these high priority VMs, we start those first. Once those are all up, then medium, then low. But we're going to talk a little more about those features unique to 2012 in a little bit. Now, the next scenario that we ran into a problem with startup storms is making sure that the VM should go to the best host possible. Now, let's say for this example, I have a four-node cluster. I have 40 virtual machines, and I want 10, 10, 10, 10. I want to balance out my capacity across my cluster. Now, the challenge that we had, again, when those first two nodes come online and I have quorum, we would be trying to start 20 VMs on this node, 20 VMs on this node. We had the startup storm problem. So we added a setting in 2008 R2 called persistent mode. And what persistent mode will do is it will start the VMs on the last host that they were purposely moved to. So in this case, when my cluster goes offline, then comes back online, it will automatically have my 10 VMs that were on node 1 go back to node 1. 10, 10, 10, so that I've automatically distributed my resources. So there's a couple questions that I get asked when I talk about this scenario. What happens if only 3 of my 4 nodes come online? Do those VMs never come online? Well, the answer to that is no. We have a timer that's in place. I believe it's a 2-minute by default. And what will happen as soon as the cluster comes online, that timer starts. We wait for 2 minutes. And if a node hosting virtual machines has not come online within 2 minutes, we go and move those VMs to another host. So the benefits of doing this is we still try to optimize placement. So we still give this last host a chance to come online, a chance to move those virtual machines. But while we're waiting for that, we give our other nodes in the cluster the chance to start up their VMs, start normally, and get past that startup storm before we move those final 10 VMs over to those remaining ones. Now, I get asked, well, what happens if there's a series of failures and those VMs gradually move to three nodes, to two nodes, to one node? Then my cluster crashes. What happens when I start it up? Well, with persistent mode, we will move them back to the node that they were last purposely placed to. And what I mean by that is if you're the administrator and you say, move this VM here, live migrate this VM here, or you use System Center Virtual Machine Manager to automatically place the VMs using performance and resource optimization, using dynamic optimization, we're going to honor those settings from SCVMM. So no matter how you planned this, how you distributed them yourself, or how SCVMM did that for you automatically, we're still going to honor those settings and move those VMs to the node that they were last purposely placed to. Now, in Windows Server 2008 R2, this was a property that was enabled by default for virtual machines, but disabled for every other workload. You can turn it on in the UI, but in Windows Server 2012, we realized 100% of our customers were doing that, so we just turn it on automatically, and we hide it from the UI. The only way you can turn this off, if you want to, is going through PowerShell, going under the covers, and disabling it through there. This is a great setting, something you want to keep. Now, as we look at the virtualization as well, another obstacle that we saw a lot of customers run into was making changes for a clustered virtual machine in Hyper-V, then moving that VM to another node in the cluster. The challenge we have here is that Hyper-V in 2008 R2 is not cluster aware. So what that means is, if you go and manage a machine, a VM through Hyper-V that's on a cluster, you make changes, those changes only get applied locally. When you move the VM to another node in the cluster, the other nodes didn't realize anything changed. So, key thing here, if you go and make changes to a clustered virtual machine, do it through Failover Cluster Manager. Launch the settings through there, update the networks through there, manage everything through Failover Cluster Manager, because when you go and launch Hyper-V Manager through it, we keep track of the changes. When you make the changes, you close out of it, we will then go and automatically push the changes to all the other nodes in the cluster. We go and update that. Now, there is a kind of a mini best practice analyzer built into failover clustering as well, a lot of people don't know about, and this is refresh virtual machine configuration. Now, when you go and hit this setting after making a change to a virtual machine, it's going to run through several tests to make sure that the VM, the changes you made, are going to work, they are appropriate for the cluster. So, for example, if you go and change the storage path of the VM, let's say you take it out of cluster shared volumes, you go and move that VM somewhere else, the other hosts don't know that that VM storage path was updated. So when you run this test, we're going to check that you have consistency to accessing your storage paths. We're going to make sure that live migration is still compatible if you changed any of the memory settings. We're going to make sure that your virtual networks still have consistent names across every host. If you go change it through Hyper-V on one host, fail it over, it has a different virtual network name, you're going to have issues managing it. So anytime you make changes to virtual machines on a cluster, do it through Failover Cluster Manager, and then refresh the virtual machine configuration. And you get a nice report that's generated from it as well. Now, Windows Server 2012, we wanted to simplify this. So instead of having to go and manually go refresh virtual machine configuration, anytime you make a change in the graphical user interface, we go refresh automatically. So we're eliminating that extra step of work. However, when we're using PowerShell in Windows Server 2012, we don't have the ability to go and know where a specific change was made. And the reason for that is when we use Failover Cluster Manager and we launch Hyper-V Manager through it, we understand the context that this is something you're doing with the cluster, now Hyper-V, now back to the cluster. When we're managing with PowerShell in Windows Server 2012, we've loaded every single PowerShell module. So you could do some stuff with cluster, then some stuff with Hyper-V, then Active Directory, back to cluster. And so we don't have the ability to scope when you're making cluster-relevant changes to Hyper-V. So if you're changing things through PowerShell, Windows Server 2012, you still need to go run a commandlet to make sure that we are aware of the changes, we go and update it. Now, another question I get asked is, what about multi-tenancy? Meaning, I have lots of customers in my environment, I'm a hoster, how could I keep all of my customers' virtual machines on the same host, or how can I spread out my different customers to different hosts? Maybe you're hosting for Coca-Cola and Pepsi. They don't want to be sharing infrastructure. Those are rivals. So what we do is we have a property that's built into Windows Server 2008 R2 called Anti-Affinity Class Name, AACN. This is a private property, so when you go to a cluster, you want to go and configure this, you need to do this through command line or through PowerShell, edit the property. What AACN is going to do is its goal to purposely try to separate any virtual machines or other resources that share the same class name. So for example, let's say I have four virtual machines, I have four hosts. My virtual machines are called Red. What's going to happen? They distribute themselves as optimally as possible, one VM per host. Let's say I have more VMs than I have hosts. So in this case, I have six blue VMs, I have four hosts. They're still going to spread themselves out as optimally as possible, but in some cases, you may have multiple VMs on the same host. But this gives you some kind of easy-to-use load balancing. It's very, very basic, but it's still something that you could use if you don't have advanced tools like System Center Virtual Machine Manager. This is also important if you want to separate virtual machines based on their role or based on their function. Let's say, for example, you have four DHCP servers in your data center. All of them are virtualized. Well, if you have all four of those VMs on a single host, and that host crashes, that's a single point of failure. You've lost that key piece of your infrastructure. So you could use anti-affinity class names to spread those four DHCP servers to different hosts in the environment. Let's say you're using guest clustering, where we have a cluster made up entirely of virtual machines. If I have a four-node guest cluster, it's sat on a single host. Again, that's a single point of failure. Lose my host, lose my entire guest cluster. So you spread out the cluster nodes across different hosts, you have high availability in the physical layer, and optimized it inside the virtual layer. So let's jump over to the demo, and I'm just going to quickly show you how to access all of these properties in Windows Server 2008 R2 failover clustering. So here's my basic cluster. First, here's a great tip. If you have not seen this utility, Remote Desktop Connection Manager, highly recommend it. It's a free download from Microsoft.com. It allows you to manage dozens or hundreds of remote desktop connections simultaneously. You can connect to things as a group. You can manage things individually, have multiple levels. So if you're managing clusters, great resource, Remote Desktop Connection Manager, completely free. Now back to the topic at hand. How do we go and optimize this Hyper-V virtual machine? So everything here is done using the properties of either the virtual machine group or the virtual machine itself, with one exception, which is the anti-affinity class names. That's what we have to do with PowerShell. So if I just click on the properties of the VM, I have my first set of choices, enabling persistent mode so that VMs stay on the last host they were placed on, and enabling auto start. So my high-priority VMs start up, my low-priority VMs stay offline. Now, when I go click on the properties of the virtual machine itself, not the group, this is where I can go and interact with my settings. So this is where I go and configure the heart beating. And remember, this was disabled by default. If you want to go have this extra health detection in Windows Server 2008 R2, you have to go and enable this. So let's move on and let's talk about the new enhancements that we've made in Windows Server 2012 failover clustering. Now, has anyone tried clustering in Windows Server 2012? Okay, a few of you, great, but a lot of the room hasn't, so hopefully you're going to get excited about some of these new features. Now, as we designed the product, when we designed Windows Server 2008, the design goal was simplicity. That's what our entire engineering team focused on. If you did clustering in 2003, it was hard. You tried it in 2008. We really tried to simplify everything from creating the cluster, easy-to-use wizards. That was the big design goal in 2008. In 2008 R2, our major design goal was optimizing for Hyper-V. What can we do to make us a great platform for virtualization? What are the critical features we need that are missing? Live migration being a great example. That was the focus. In Windows Server 2012, our focus has not been just to be the best virtualization platform, but really to prepare for this private cloud, where we go beyond virtualization, have much broader scale. So you're going to see a lot of the features here are designed not just to make virtualization great, but to prepare us for this new concept, this new model of private cloud. The first thing we did is increase our scalability. Clustered 2008 R2 supports 16 nodes, 1,000 virtual machines. We still didn't have many customers that came that close, other than really the Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies. But now we're taking it a step further. We now support 64 hosts in a cluster, 4,000 virtual machines. Best in the industry. I believe right now VMware is 32 hosts, 3,000 virtual machines. So our goal here is to exceed. This includes over 1,000 VMs per node. So if you have the capability, if you have a 2 or 3 terabyte server, terabytes of memory, you can maybe get that high, but we don't think many customers are even close. So when we're coming out with these numbers and this testing, it's not based on what we can do today or what we want to do in a year. We are really trying to look 3 years, 5 years down the line and still make sure that we can scale and optimize for that time frame. 320 logical processes per host or 64 per VM. 4 terabytes of RAM per host, 1 terabyte of VM. Now, just always keep in mind when you're planning with these numbers, make sure you have reserve capacity in mind. And what I mean by that is when you have a failure or when you have planned maintenance such as patching, all of those VMs have to go somewhere. So always assume for maybe every 8 nodes you have in your cluster, plan for failure or plan for downtime for at least one of them. So if you have a 16 node, have reserve capacity for 2 nodes being down. 64 nodes, have reserve capacity for 8 nodes being down. It's just kind of a best planning here, regardless of the type of maintenance you're doing. Now, one of the other big tenets of Windows Server 2012 has been multi-machine management. There's some marketing term, the many servers managed by one, the power of many under one. So we try to embrace that, and we really try to integrate with the server manager as well. And say, what can we do to make it easier to manage clusters? Well, for us, cluster, it's a logical group of physical servers that we're trying to present as a single giant virtual server, right? We give it a virtual IP address, a virtual network name. So from really anyone's perspective, they connect to a cluster, single resource, but underneath it, they get all these underlying resources. So we wanted to kind of follow this concept in Server Manager. Now, if you've played with Server Manager, you probably are familiar with this new server groups, which allows you to group a set of physical servers, maybe by role, maybe by geography, inside an organizational unit, a server group. Well, with clustering, you can go add every single node in your cluster into a server group with just a click. You could go and launch Failover Cluster Manager from any node in the cluster by using Server Manager. Just click on the node, launch Failover Cluster Manager. We have remote feature and role installation. So if I'm an admin on one server, I can go and install my features and my roles on a different server that I have access to. So just trying to simplify the management experience here. But we get asked, okay, what's the upgrade path? Clustered didn't support upgrades from 2008 to 2008 R2 of virtual machines. Let me clarify that. So what you would have to do in the old version if you were migrating, you could export and import a VM. You could do a backup and restore. Or you would destroy the VM, recreate it from scratch on the new node. So we wanted to make this upgrade path a little easier. And the failover clustering migration wizard now supports Hyper-V virtual machines. So you have your old cluster, you have your new cluster, you go launch the migration wizard from the new cluster. You point to the old cluster, it goes and analyzes it, it lists all the virtual machines. You select which ones you want to copy, and then it will start the migration wizard. Now, basically what the migration wizard does, it's encapsulating an import and an export, but also mapping your storage and your network topology. So it's going to export them from the old cluster, import them to the new cluster, but it's going to go a few steps further. It's going to say, what are the different virtual networks on your old cluster? Do they have public access? Are they internal, external? What are the networks on your new cluster? Do they have public access? These two VMs map to this external network? So in this case, our recommendation is that these two VMs will map to this external network on this cluster. We do the same with our storage. We look at how many CSV volumes you have. We look at how many LUNs per volume. And we tried to do the same mapping based on storage size, based on number of LUNs. So our goal here is to simplify this experience, simplify this upgrade process. Export them from the old cluster, import them on the new cluster. Now, you still cannot mix cluster nodes from different versions. So this means I cannot have a two-node cluster. One is 2008 R2. The other node is 2012. We do not support mixed clusters. We do not support live migrating between clusters of different versions either. So when you do this upgrade process, going through the migration wizard, there will be downtime. This is not live. This is an upgrade. Hopefully, it's a one-time thing. So, you know, deal with the pain for this one upgrade, and we'll get you. We'll simplify as much as we can. Now, the next big enhancement that we made specifically for Hyper-V was creating a brand new set of tests just for Hyper-V. Validation. It's one of the best new features we came out in 2008 R2. It saves our customers millions of dollars in support calls every year because so many of the most common misconfigurations in a cluster can now be resolved by our customers themselves without having to call product support. But we wanted to take it a step further in Windows Server 2012. And we did this by looking at Hyper-V, saying, what are the most common problems we had with Hyper-V? We spoke to our product support teams. We do monthly and quarterly reviews with them, figuring out what are customers hitting, what are the most common misconfigurations, what could we easily resolve by adding a new test into Validate. And we came up with this suite of Hyper-V configuration tests. So what's going to happen now? When you go and create your cluster, you build the cluster, if we detect that the Hyper-V role is installed on any one of those nodes, we're going to go run this additional set of tests. It's going to check things such as the virtual networks are the same name, the Hyper-V role is installed. You have the same processor architecture. You still can't mix Intel and AMD. We're basically going to check that you're following all the best practices needed to be successful. And we give the same type of information, a yellow bang for a warning, best practice not followed, or a red X saying, there's a major problem, the cluster won't work. So you could go and proactively resolve these problems before you get the cluster in production. Additionally, as we look to improve Validate, we made it much, much faster. If you did validation and you had a lot of nodes and a lot of physical disks, sometimes validation could take hours. We even heard of some cases where it would take days to complete. We had a customer with a 16-node cluster, 500 disks. You had to test every disk against every node. Took the customer days. So we really looked at how do we improve this experience for everyone. All of our tests are much faster. Specifically, our storage tests are much, much faster as well. So trying to make validation quicker, get you up and running much quicker. Now, probably one of the most popular new features for clustering is virtual machine prioritization. Now, we mentioned we had this in 2008 R2. You had the binary option of important, not important, no auto start. We made this a little more granular here by giving it high, medium, and low importance. So when do we use this? Well, first, we use it when we look at our startup order. So if all of the VMs in my cluster are offline, I start up the cluster, I start up the VMs, high priority first, then medium, then low. And the no auto start, those ones will stay offline. So when would you use this? Well, if you have business critical servers, you want your business servers to be up and running so your company makes money. If you have infrastructure servers, you have Active Directory, DHCP, DNS, kind of the critical roles to running the rest of the IT department. Get those up and running. Then you can get up your medium, low priority. We also honor this when we're doing a live migration or evacuating a host. So let's say you have a host. You need to patch it immediately because there's a virus infecting the organization. You start a live migration. You have 30 virtual machines on the host. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to live migrate those high-priority VMs first, then medium, then low. So if you need to pull the plug and you say, you know what, this virus is too bad, I can live with my medium and my low-priority VMs not moving over, that's fine. You can do that now. Wait for your high-priority to live migrate, then pull the plug. Turn off the others. when we do node maintenance mode. This is another feature we're going to be talking about soon. We lock a node for maintenance, and we will serially evacuate all of the VMs off it, following this priority. But one of the more interesting features is what we are calling preemption. And what that means basically is turn off low priority VMs if high priority VMs need those resources. So what we do is we look across the whole cluster. If we're reaching maximum resource utilization on all of our hosts, maybe some hosts have crashed, we want to make sure that we don't kill an entire host. And what we do is we will start to turn off your low priority VMs. If you need the capacity, you need the memory, we keep those high priority VMs running no matter what. We got to start shutting things down. We start with low priority, then medium priority. So this way, again, highest availability for your most important services. Now, we've added a lot of new failover placement policies as well. When we did failover policies in 2008, you really had a limited set of options. You would say, I want to live migrate. You would pick a node that you wanted to live migrate it to. What we could do now is we have an option to live migrate to the best possible node. Now, this is somewhat like System Center Virtual Machine Manager's intelligent placement. With intelligent placement, you can look at all of the hosts. You can see which have the most free resources, and we will start by moving the VMs to those hosts. Very popular feature. We wanted to put it straight in Windows Server 2012. It's not quite as advanced, but it offers the same concept of allowing us to prioritize our hosts. And we did it using only one metric, though. It's not configurable. But we did this using the memory. So every time you live migrate, do a failover, you have the option of having the cluster pick the best possible host, and it's going to do the host with the most free memory resources. As we analyzed all of our customers' data, we found that memory was traditionally the number one bottleneck, followed by storage, followed by network, followed by CPU. So we prioritized, we said, if you do this live migration, pick the best possible node, go with the number one priority, move it to the host that has the most free memory. Now, as we evaluate all of the VMs and we look to move them, we do actually look at each individual VM, see if there's any types of properties that could impact why we want to move it. So, for example, if we're looking at a VM that's using 24 gigs of memory, and we're comparing that to another high-priority VM that's using 2 gigs of memory, we look at the best available host, and we will move whichever of those makes sense to the best available host, and map that algorithm across all the other VMs, all the other nodes in the cluster. Additionally, we are NUMA-aware, non-uniform memory access aware. Now, NUMA is a type of hardware architecture that looks at optimizing the processing by purposely trying to place a VM on a host that has the smallest distance between a processor and memory. I mean, we're talking about microcentimeters. But as you scale up, as you do a lot of operations, that distance can matter. So as we look at NUMA placement, we are fully NUMA aware. So as we try to pick the host as well, we also try to find which host has the most free NUMA nodes, meaning the host which has the most optimized memory that can be used as quick as possible. So we're still trying to honor some of these best practices of Hyper-V within failover clustering. Now, we talked about monitoring the health of the actual virtual machine and the guest operating system. But we're now taking it a step further. And we can now monitor the health of services running inside the virtual machine. So let's look up the stack about our availability. We monitor the physical servers, the storage, the network. If something becomes unavailable, we're resilient to that. We monitor the health of the operating system. If our OS crashes on a node, we fail everything over to another node. We monitor the health of the virtual machines. If a VM crashes, we can still do a failover. If you turn on heartbeat monitoring, we monitor the health of the guest operating system. And this goes the next step. This looks at the services running inside the guest operating system. So what we do here, when you go and configure this, we can basically give you a list of every service that's running inside Service Control Manager in your guest OS, you could pick a particular service. Maybe you're running Virtual Machine Manager inside a VM. You want to monitor the health of that. Pick the VMM service. What we do is we interact with Service Control Manager by looking at the different event logs. Every time a service crashes, it writes an event to the event logs, the Service Control Manager event logs. We go and read these errors if they come up. And through the VM bus, which is the communication channel between the virtual machine and the host, we could go and send commands to the VM and tell the VM, restart this service, restart the service, restart the VM, fail over the VM to a different node. So we're going this extra level of visibility. Now, this can also be enabled independently from either the guest OS or the host OS. However, the guest OS does need to be Windows Server 2012. So if you turn this on, we do need interaction between the guest OS being Windows Server 2012, the host OS being Windows Server 2012, so they can make this communication. If you're running Linux in the VM guest, if you're running Windows Server 2008 R2 in the VM guest, unfortunately, you can't use this feature. So 2012 in the guest, 2012 on the host. Now, live migration has been one of the most popular features that we added in 2008 R2. We're taking it a whole new step further. Now, if you've watched any of the Hyper-V overview sessions, Windows Server overview sessions, you've probably seen a glimpse of, you know, some of these live migration features. But we're going to review them again, make sure it's clear on what are the benefits, what are the new enhancements. So live migration today in 2008 R2. What we can do within the scope of a single cluster, 16 nodes, shared storage with our VHD on the shared storage device, we can move a running virtual machine from one physical server to another with no downtime. It's bound within the cluster, so it cannot move to another cluster, and the storage cannot move. Storage is always in one place. Our VM moves around. So first thing we've added here to try to improve these. So live migration queuing. Let me talk about this enhancement first. So live migration queuing gives us the ability to live migrate or to stack up a series of live migrations. So if you could only do one live migration at a time, as you could do in 2008 R2, you needed to evacuate a host, it'd be painful. You'd have to write a script, do it one at a time. System Center Virtual Machine Manager gave you the ability to queue live migrations. It was a popular feature. We pulled it into Windows Server 2012. So you can multi-select a huge number of VMs, click Live Migrate, and they will live migrate as many as possible and queue the rest. So this moves us into concurrent live migrations. Windows Server 2008 R2, you could do one live migration between a pair of hosts. If you had a 8-node cluster, you could do 4 live migrations simultaneously. One live migration between every pair. But we were restricted to 1 per pair. Windows Server 2012, no limits. As many concurrent live migrations as your hardware can handle. So be flexible. By default, it's configured to 2 to 4 VMs, depending on your host capacity. But you could go and change that. You can have unlimited number of simultaneous live migrations if you want. This gives you the advantage of evacuating a host quicker, evacuating it easier. Now, we've also used a lot of these new features in our traditional VM mobility. So anytime we do a failover, we honor prioritization. Failover high priority first, medium priority, low priority. Anytime we do a fail back, we do the same thing. High priority, low priority, high priority, medium, low priority. So new types of live migration. What have we added here? So again, traditional live migration, storage is in one place, we move our VM around. New live migration, first of all, storage live migration. This is functionally equivalent to VMware's storage vMotion technology. In this case, I keep my VM running in one location, and I move the VHD file, or the VHDX file, between different locations. So I can move it to a different SAN, so long as my node has access to both my original storage and the new SAN. Additionally, we now support Hyper-V over SMB. We support Hyper-V using file shares. So you don't even need to have a SAN connected to both VMs. You could live migrate, storage live migrate this VHD file from your traditional cluster SAN to a file share and have no downtime while you do this. We copy all of the VHD information, then we copy the changes that have been made, zero downtime, reconnecting the client. The next solution we have is a network live migration. In this case, we have our storage in one location, and we can live migrate our VM anywhere in the whole environment, so long as it can still touch that storage. So what's changed since 2008 R2? Well, we were bound by a cluster in 2008 R2. You could only live migrate within the cluster. In Windows Server 2012, you can live migrate anywhere in the data center, so long as you have this network connectivity between both nodes and a connection to the storage. So you could live migrate from a standalone host to a cluster, cluster to standalone host, cluster to cluster, standalone host to standalone host. No limitations on how we do live migration. Now, the next enhancement that we brought is what we call a shared nothing live migration. This means we could just move anything anywhere in the data center. So we could simultaneously move our VM from one cluster to another while simultaneously moving our storage from a SAN to an SMB file share. We have no association of forcing the storage or forcing the VM to be bound to either a host or the storage array. So very flexible options here in how you want to go move your VMs. And so what this really does, as we think of the private cloud model, we say that my cluster supports 64 nodes. Really, the cluster now scales to any size you want. Now that you have live migration, virtual machines aren't bound within those 64 VMs. If you need to scale out beyond 64 VMs, beyond 64 hosts, 4,000 VMs, just go live migrate them to another cluster. Zero downtime, live migrate the storage. So you really can scale up to clusters of any size using this technology. Now that talks mostly about the data center, but we can now scale beyond the data center. We have built in disaster recovery for Hyper-V with a technology called the Hyper-V Replica. Now if you did clustering in 2008 R2 and you wanted a disaster recovery solution, you would build a multi-site cluster. Basically, it's one cluster stretched across two different physical locations. But one of the requirements was you needed to have the storage in both locations. Let's say, you know, there's a fire, there's an earthquake, there's a power outage. If you lose a whole data center, you've lost that storage there. You need to make sure that you have a redundant copy of the storage at your second location. So the only way you could do that, copy that data, was through some type of replication. Now, SQL and Exchange, they have built-in replication solutions. But beyond that, Microsoft doesn't offer a solution. You have to work with a third party. DFS replication is not supported. The reason why? DFS replication will replicate the information only when the file is closed. So it works great for Word documents, but for SQL databases, for VM VHD files that never close, you're never going to replicate that data. So when you have a crash, you've lost all of your data. So this meant that our customers, they had to go work with third-party replication vendors. Hardware-based replication at the block level, Dell, EMC, HP. Software-based replication at the file level. DataCore, Neverfail, Sios, SteelEye. So there were a lot of vendors out there that offered this replication. But it was a tax. It was another partner to work with, and it was more expensive for you. So we said, okay, let's change this. Let's build disaster recovery right into the product. And so we've created this feature called the Hyper-V Replica. What we do with the Hyper-V Replica is we take a copy of your VHD from the original location, replicate that to the secondary location. After that initial copy, we replicate just the changes, the deltas, which are much smaller. Now, the first time you do this replication, if you're trying to do it over a wide area network, You're trying to copy a 20 gigabyte file. That might be really slow, so we've even provided an option where you can save a copy of the initial replica to physical media, like a thumb drive. Go take the thumb drive to the second location, install the replica at that second location manually, and then only do the differential copies. So by default, this will replicate every 15 minutes. It can be configurable. So if you want to reduce the amount of possible data loss to less than 15 minutes when you have a crash, you could do that. There are, of course, trade-offs with performance, how often you replicate. And the other limitation that we have with the replica is you cannot replicate from one cluster to a second cluster. You can replicate from standalone host to standalone host, from standalone host to cluster, cluster to standalone host. But we don't support this cluster-to-cluster replication. So just one tip to keep in mind there. But great solution, and it's free in box. There's actually a lab in the hands-on lab area for Windows Server where you can go and configure the Hyper-V replica. Very good lab, gives you kind of the basic understanding how you do replication to your disaster recovery site, and then after the crash, how you do reverse replication back to your primary site. There's limitations on the cluster communication. Honestly, I don't really know why, but that is one of the restrictions that we have, no cluster-to-cluster replication. So next feature that we want to talk about was something that was also popular in VMM 2008R2, which was node maintenance mode. Again, popular feature. We took it straight into Windows Server 2012. What node maintenance mode does is it allows you to essentially lock a node so that nothing can move onto it. Now, think about if you're trying to patch a server. If you're trying to move everything off that server, you don't want things moving back onto it. So node maintenance mode, it has existed for a while, since at least 2008. Basically, it's going to lock a node. Nothing can move onto it. But what we've done, we've taken it a step further by giving you the option to drain roles as well. So when you put it into maintenance mode, you can also evacuate the host at the same time. So you lock it, and it will live migrate all of your VMs, or it will do a failover for other types of workloads. So you need to do some type of patching, some type of maintenance to the host, lock it, evacuate it. Come back after a coffee, the node is now yours to do whatever you need with it. So again, just trying to simplify the management, simplify the administration. And this is one of the features which uses virtual machine priority. Now, another big feature around maintenance is reducing the burden of cluster patching. So we designed a feature called cluster aware updating. And what this will do is it will serially go and patch every host in your cluster up to all 64 nodes. So what we do is we integrate with anything that uses the Windows Server Update Agent, the WUA. So this is Windows Server Update Services or Windows Update. In the release candidate, you also have the ability to go and deploy a custom hotfix as well, so not even using Windows Update. And what we're going to do is we're going to create what is called a baseline, which is a series of patches. We say we want to apply this series of patches to a server group, which in this case is a cluster. It's going to go and pick the node with the fewest number of running resources on it. It's going to live migrate the virtual machines using virtual machine prioritization still. Once the host is evacuated, it patches it, it reboots it, it waits for the server to come online, and then it waits for the server to rejoin the cluster. Once it's rejoined the cluster, we feel comfortable that the patch was successful. We then we unpause it, take it out to maintenance mode, move on to the next node in the cluster, repeat the process again. Now, we also check for dependent patches. Sometimes you need to reboot, might need to wait for some more patches. You require another reboot. So we are aware of that, dependent patches requiring multiple reboots. We want to simplify this, reduce failovers. So the question is around, if I move my VMs to another host and the host crashes, do we have resiliency? No.
Because, so, kind of the bottom line, you move VM back, and
Yes, so the question is, what happens if we apply a bad patch, basically? Are we aware of that? Yes, so that's one of the things that we kept in mind. And, of course, anytime you install a patch, it can impact any part of the operating system, right? It could be a patch for networking, it could be for storage, it could be for Win Server, who knows? So there's no way to always programmatically determine that a patch has been applied correctly and it works. There are too many patches, there are too many inconsistencies. So our way of ensuring that a patch works is the host restarts, the host operating system starts, and the host rejoins the cluster and starts normal cluster communication. At that point, once we know that it's an active member of the cluster again, we start failing resources back to it. Now, at any point, we have a problem installing the patch. There's a failure on a patch installation. If the host does not come back online, if the host does not rejoin the cluster, we stop the operation. And for this reason, we don't want to go and apply a bad patch to every node in the cluster and take down the entire cluster. That would be low availability. So our goal here, we do it one at a time, and we're careful. As soon as we run into a problem, we stop the process, we alert the admin, and we ask the admin to take care of it. Now, I get asked, but I thought this feature existed in Virtual Machine Manager 2012, this cluster-aware updating, this cluster patching. I believe it's called Cluster Update Manager. What's the difference here? So essentially, these two technologies in Windows Server 2012 and System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2012, they follow the same logic. It's serially patching hosts. The difference is, in Server 2012, we will patch a cluster no matter what type of cluster it is. So we can patch file server clusters, SQL clusters, Exchange clusters, any type of cluster. Virtual Machine Manager 2012, it only manages clusters that run Hyper-V. So it will only do live migration for Hyper-V clusters. So think of the VMM version just for virtualized hosts. Think of the Windows Server version for any type of cluster in the environment. So let's take a look at some of these properties in our Windows Server 2012, how we configure them. So I'm now back in my Windows Server 2012 cluster. This is running the release candidate version that was made available a few weeks ago. And here's the new version of Failover Cluster Manager. So with Failover Cluster Manager, it's reasonably similar to what you had before in 2008 R2. You notice that there's a few differences, though. First of all, the roles. There is no drop-down here that lists every role as part of the navigation window. If you have 1,000 VMs or 4,000 VMs, that gets ugly very quickly. So we simplified the roles and made them under a single interface in their own window. Now, what's nice about this is it's sortable. You can sort by name, status, priority. You get live tiles with live information. So much easier to manage. We've also added multi-select capability. So if I want to go and do a batch of operations on multiple VMs at once, let's say I want to do 5 live migrations at once, I have the ability to do that with my multi-select. They're going to honor the things such as queuing, virtual machine priority, simultaneous live migrations. Now, if I want to go and select a node, I get my traditional choice of nodes. If I have a big cluster, I can search. But in this case, let's go ahead and let's move them to the best node possible. Remember, this is the new feature where we do kind of the basic movement, basic placement. We look for which host has the most free resources, the most free memory. We move to that. So you should see my high priority go first, followed by my mediums, and finally my low. So we can see that here in this multiple live migration, we're still going and honoring this process. Now, another change in clustering in 2012 is that cluster shared volumes now supports more roles. If you use cluster shared volumes in 2008 R2, which is our distributed access file system for Hyper-V, you had to agree to this pop-up and end user license agreement that said, I promise to only use cluster shared volumes for virtual machines. You no longer have that. Cluster shared volumes gets turned on by default. Currently, it also supports the file server role. There will be additional roles and servers that it supports announced at a later date. But what this does now, for the file server, it allows you to have distributed access for a file server. And so there's a new technology called the scale-out file server, Windows Server 2012. And what it does is it puts a network name and an IP address on every single node in the cluster. Now, with traditional file server clustering, you'd place those resources on a single node. If that node crashed, if you had to fail it over, everything would go offline. You couldn't access your file server. It would come back online. Then your shares would be available. So what we've done here, we've gone for a model of redundancy. We place this network name on every node in the cluster. So our clients, first of all, they load balance the traffic. They get distributed across the different hosts. But secondly, if one of those nodes crashes, that network name's unavailable. Rather than waiting for a failover to happen, the client's just going to retry connecting to a different node. The router that they're going through, it has awareness to go send the clients to the different nodes. So if one of those nodes crashes, we take the next IP address packet, route it to a different node that is online. So very additional high availability for the file server role. And so if we go and enable the storage, we look at our disks, making a disk a CSV disk. As easy as adding it to cluster shared volumes. It goes offline, comes back online. So then we have our traditional reports. So first, let me show you our C cluster storage. There's our three volumes. So very similar to Windows Server 2008 R2. Now, if I go and look at my reports, which are under C, Windows cluster reports, I'm actually going to go and pull up a full validation report that I ran 2 weeks ago for TechEd Europe. This is our Create the Cluster. And this is going to show you, wrong report. Here's the validation report. And this is going to show you this new set of tests, the Hyper-V configuration tests. As long as one of the nodes in the cluster supports Hyper-V, we go run these tests. So as we look at the tests, we get information about the servers running Hyper-V, compatibility for virtualized fiber channel, checking the memory resources, checking the processor compatibility, checking that the role is installed, and then checking that we have consistency across the processor manufacturer. So again, trying to make it simple for you deploying a Hyper-V host. Now, as we wrap it up here, we're going to talk about Virtual Machine Manager 2008 R2. And I have a great demo available here as well where I'm going to show you how we can do multiple hypervisor management, meaning we manage VMware clusters, using Virtual Machine Manager as well. Now, with Virtual Machine Manager, there are a lot of features that existed in 2008 R2 that are still applicable in 2012. So, first of all, the most basic one, VMM, it can manage clusters. It can manage Hyper-V clusters 2008, 2008 R2. As of right now, Virtual Machine Manager cannot manage Windows Server 2012. So if you have the beta of Windows Server 2012, you have System Center 2012, don't try to add the cluster. Don't try to manage it. It currently does not work. That is going to be supported in Service Pack 1 of System Center 2012. So shortly after Windows Server 2012 releases, there will be an update for System Center 2012. That will then support Windows Server 2012, Windows Server clusters. VMM also supports different types of configuration changes. Again, 2008 R2 here. You can manage VMware clusters using vCenter. You have high availability for the VMM server, running it inside a clustered VM, using SQL high availability for the backend databases, using a clustered file server for your VMM library. Operations Manager has integration to monitor the different hosts. So again, this is what we had in 2008 R2, but we take this all a step further in 2012. The next feature that we have in 2008 R2, and you can use, is intelligent placement. This is the algorithm that's customizable that says, when you move a virtual machine, which host do you want to move it to? What's most important to you? Is it your CPU, your network, your storage, or your memory? Now, after doing our data analysis on this, we found most people chose memory was most important. And so for the new Windows Server 2012 cluster placement logic, we use same type of algorithm, pick the best host, but specifically, we look at just the memory. Now, to make it easy for the admins to use as well, we use what's called a star-rated system, a nice, easy graphical display saying the host has between 0 and 5 stars, depending on what's best for you. Fully customizable. Now, we also have the advanced cluster management. So if a host isn't available, if it's not going to be able to do a live migration, we're going to let you know as well. We're going to detect if the live migration could be done. And we have the live migration queue and the live migration retries. Also, we have node maintenance mode, where you have the ability to lock a node and evacuate all of the VMs off it. All of these very popular features, we pulled them into Windows Server 2012. Now, one of the more popular features, though one of the harder ones to configure, was performance and resource optimization. This is an integration between Operations Manager and Virtual Machine Manager. And what Operations Manager is going to do is monitor the health of the hosts. If one of them gets overloaded, or if there's a problem with a VM, too much memory, it's going to go and tell one of the VMs to live migrate to a different host. So think of this as a type of load balancing. Operations Manager detects a problem. It reports it to VMM. VMM uses intelligent placement to live migrate it to the next best available host, all with no downtime. But now Windows Server 2012, we've taken everything a step further. For high availability for the VMM server itself, you can now run that as a first-class cluster resource. So you can make your VMM management server highly available on the bare metal of the cluster. What you would have to do before is put it inside a clustered virtual machine. And there were often challenges if you were trying to live migrate that clustered VM, which had virtual machine manager that was performing the live migration. A lot of challenges there. So we got around that and we said, highest availability, best performance, you now have the option to run VMM directly on the physical server itself. You can now create a cluster and validate a cluster straight through Virtual Machine Manager. In the past, you would have to go build the cluster using Failover Cluster Manager, then add it to VMM to be able to manage it. Now you can do everything just from VMM, simplifying the admin experience. You could create non-highly available VMs on a cluster. There might be some cases where you want to have a domain controller that's sitting on a standalone host. VMM 2008 R2, you'd have to manually go into Hyper-V and configure it, because any time you deployed a VM on a clustered host, it would want to make it highly available. Now, you have the flexibility to do that without forcing it to be highly available. And we've also supported adding clusters in untrusted domains. So next thing we talked about is our extensions to our hypervisor management. 2008 R2, we could manage VMware. 2012, we can continue to manage VMware, but we also manage Citrix. We could do ZenMotion. We could use some of our load balancing technologies on a VMware cluster, on a Citrix cluster, fully supported. Now, VMware still has a dependency on having a vCenter server. The reason why is anytime we want to try to communicate with an ESXi host, there is no programmatic interface. So that means SCVMM cannot directly talk to that VMware host. It needs to go and talk to vCenter, which is an intermediary, and that vCenter will then go and talk to the ESX host. Unfortunately, that restriction isn't removed. So if you're using vCenter, you need to use at least, it currently supports up to vCenter 4.1, but there will be support for vCenter 5 coming very shortly. Now, if you're using Citrix, there is no requirement to have ZenCenter. We can directly communicate with the Zen servers. We can do ZenMotion. So you have that full management capability without needing ZenCenter. So all the features that you could do with Hyper-V, not all, most of the features you could do with Hyper-V, you could do using SCVMM 2008 R2. Live migration, vMotion, ZenMotion. You could share multiple hypervisors with the same cloud. You could automatically deploy services to the same individual host. Now, I'm going to show you a demo of some of our multi-hypervisor management capabilities. So what I have here again is VMM 2012. I've created a few clouds. And what I'm doing with these clouds is first I'm going to take a look at the property. Now, the concept of a cloud Basically, a cloud is the collection of resources across your entire data center. But you might want some granularity. Maybe your human resources department only gets a few VMs. They get a small cloud. Engineering gets most of the VMs. They get a big cloud. But within a cloud, you get to assign different types of capacity and capabilities. So as we go take a look at the resources provided in this particular cloud I have, my production cloud, I say that I can support my Hyper-V servers, and I can support my vCenter servers. If I take a look at my capability profiles, I'm saying if I add a virtual machine to this cloud, I can add it to my Hyper-V hosts, or I can add it to my VMware hosts, my ESX hosts. Now, let's go and actually add a couple of ESX hosts that are in a cluster. So I've already added my vCenter server. Remember, I need vCenter to be able to manage my ESX hosts, because I talk to vCenter, vCenter talks to the hosts. I'm going to go and add resources, add my ESX hosts. So first, I need to just select an administrative account so that I can actually access the VMs. Then it's going to scan the data center, and it's going to look at all unmanaged hosts which are available. In this case, it's found a cluster which contains two ESX hosts. It's going to ask me, what group do I want to go and add this to? What host group? So I'm going to use my infrastructure servers. I'm going to confirm the information. And we've now added our host to our environment. Now, a new feature that we've added for VMware management in Windows Server 2012 is new import capabilities. We can import virtual networks, map those to Hyper-V networks. We can import VMware templates and map those to Hyper-V templates. So I'm going to go and import a few VMware templates. It's going to go communicate with my vCenter server. I'm going to look at my VMware library, find the templates. I'm going to select a couple. And we can see that they're now added here. Now I'm going to take a look at one of the templates that I added earlier. Take a look at the properties of this. And as we go and look at the hardware configuration, you can see that we've gone and we've mapped all of the properties that we had in VMware over to a VMM template. So we've moved the Hyper-V template, we figured out what properties are relevant to what resources, mapped that back to a VMM template. So easy to use, easy to redeploy. So if you're thinking about moving over to Hyper-V from VMware, we're trying to provide you with some of the tools that allow you to go and do that. Now, bare metal provisioning is a new enhancement added in VMM 2012. Now, what we could do in previous versions of VMM is once a host had the operating system installed, we could go add it to the cluster, but the cluster already had to be created. What we're doing in VMM 2012 is being able to manage bare metal servers, meaning that there's no host operating system installed. There's no operating system whatsoever. Basically, there's the BIOS that the manufacturer installed. We plug in the power. We plug in an Ethernet cable. It gets an IP address from DHCP. And beyond that, what we now do is we communicate with the server's baseboard management controller, which is basically a component with an API that allows us to go install operating systems. So as soon as we get a new server, we could go configure it, add it to storage, add it to networking. We can install the operating system. We can run a pre-installation script, a post-installation script. Then we can add features and roles to it. So we can immediately add Hyper-V role, failover cluster, and feature. We can now create a cluster or add it to an existing cluster through VMM. We can run validate to test the configuration. And again, all of this can be done by simply plugging in the power, plugging in an Ethernet cable. You can now add these bare metal hosts to your existing Hyper-V cluster. Here's a brief overview of the update management. Again, same type of utility that you had, or very similar to the functionality of cluster-aware updating in Windows Server 2012. The difference, again, Update Manager only supports Hyper-V hosts. Windows Server 2012 updating supports any type of cluster. But another difference of this also gives you the ability to patch pretty much any component of the VMM server. So this includes your library servers, your Pixie servers, your update servers, and the VMM server as well, even if they're not clustered. But it does not patch the virtual machines or the VHDs. It only patches the host. However, there is a feature which is available as a solution accelerator, so a free download, called the Microsoft Virtual Machine Servicing Tool, VMST. What this solution accelerator does is it communicates with either Configuration Manager, Windows Server Update Services, it downloads patches, it will go to your VMM library, it will start the VM, it will patch it, turn the VM off, put it back in the library. So this way you can ensure that your offline VMs stay compliant. We had customers that would deploy a VM a year ago. They'd go redeploy it, and they forgot to patch it over the course of the year. When they put it out, it was immediately vulnerable. So with the VMST, you could ensure that all of your VMs in your library stay patched, stay compliant. Last couple of features I'm going to talk about are dynamic optimization and power optimization. What dynamic optimization does is it load balances your resources across the cluster. Now, we had the feature called performance and resource optimization that did the same thing. It looked at the hosts, it load balanced the VMs. What's different about dynamic optimization is it could do live migration, so no downtime. It can manage other types of clusters, so it can do this load balancing on VMware clusters. It could do it on Citrix clusters. And it has no requirement for using Operations Manager. So if you only want to use Virtual Machine Manager, don't want to go and install Operations Manager, you can take advantage of this load balancing capability without now having this dependence on Operations Manager. Power optimization is an extension of this feature. And what this can do is it can turn off unused hosts in your cluster. So let's say you're a 9-to-5 business. Most of the time, overnight, your servers are dormant. They're unused. What we can do is live migrate VMs off of that host, turn it off. We still maintain cluster quorum. It has full cluster awareness. If another server crashes, we'll bring one back online to make sure you have enough resources. In the morning, when those VMs start coming online, resources start to be used, we'll automatically turn those hosts back on, add them back to your cluster. So you maintain high availability here. And finally, we've added placement enhancements. So following our traditional model of looking at best practices for network, storage, memory, CPU, we've just made all of these a little better. Now, as we wrap that up, I hope I gave you a broad overview of some of the capabilities in 2008 R2, 2012 for both VMM and Windows Server. And we hope that you got some best practices out of this as well. And you can do some of these things today. That whole first segment showed you optimizations you could do on your existing clusters, turning on heart beating, auto start, persistent mode, anti-affinity class names, refreshing the virtual machine configuration. So take advantage of all of those today. Throughout the week, there are a lot of cluster sessions, and we have our cluster experts in the Technical Learning Center at one of the Windows Server booths. And if you have an internet connection when you leave, please complete an evaluation. No promises on that one. Thank you very much, guys. Since it's the last session of the day, I don't think I will get kicked out. So I will take questions up front, and I will answer them live. So if you have questions, feel free to come up front. I'll stay on the mic until I get kicked out.